You are welcome, Deputy Minister. Thank you for your presence here. I don't see the DG. Oh, okay. All right. Anyway, we know with this committee, we usually don't introduce one another. We think we know one another very much. So hence, I can see that the DG is not here. But for that, for the sake of that, I will allow ourselves to reintroduce ourselves again, because there might be new people around here. Let's just start there. I'll start with myself. I'm Boroto Omar. I'm the acting chairperson. I will explain when we come to the apologies. Thank you very much.
Good morning. My name is Sipho Plaki. I'm representing the Northwest Province in the National Council of Provinces.
Dumelang, lebitso la ka ke Lydia. Ke moradi wa Moshodi. Ke tswa mane province-ing ya Freistata.
Good morning, everybody. Just before we start, Honorable Chairperson, just to follow the correct procedures, because the Chairperson of the Select Committee is not here. Maybe we must start there. I don't have a problem with you. And then my name is Michael de Villiers, and I'm the representative of the Western Cape in the NCOP. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Willem Faber, and I represent the Northern Cape Province.
Thank you very much, Honorable de Villiers. You are very correct. You know, this following of procedures, sometimes we are in a hurry and we falter. Can we allow you to do that? But it's not me now. I'll allow Marcel to take the process forward. Marcel?
Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Marcel Williams. I'm the committee secretary for the Select Committee on Social Services. In the absence of the Honorable Khasmeni chairperson, I would like members to nominate an acting chairperson. Ms. Moshodi?
Since I nominate the name of Honorable Boroto to be the acting chairperson for today.
Thank you, Ms. Moshodi. Mr. de Villiers? Thank you. Ms. Boroto, will you please take the chair?
I'm here. Thank you very much, and I'm sorry for taking shortcuts. I'm actually the whip of this committee, and I come from Mpumalanga, representing the interest of the people of Mpumalanga. Now, Honorable Deputy, Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, members, Chair, for this opportunity. I'm Gwen Ramukhupa, the Deputy Minister of Health, and I'll ask the team to introduce themselves. Our team would consist of two teams. Or sub-teams, rather, those that will be dealing with the bill on the Office of Standards Compliance, and the one that will also be dealing with the overall annual performance plan. Thank you.
Honourable Acting Chair, Honourable Members, I'm Dr. Jogan Pillay, the Acting DG.
Morning, Chair Members. My name is Ian van der Merwe. I'm the CFO.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. I'm Nobaya Nislaza, Chief Operating Officer.
Good morning. I'm Alani Bormerans from Policy Coordination and Integrated Planning at the National Department of Health.
Morning, Honorable Members. Morning, DM. My name is Ms. Riley. I'm the Corporate Services Head in the Health and the National Department of Health.
Morning, everyone. I'm Richard Dalmaid. I'm from PMG.
And those from the department occupy this seat. The PMG people can also occupy the back seat, please.
Morning. My name is Rufno Makoshi from Legal Services.
There's a chair, Doctor. Oh.
Good must I introduce myself again? Good morning. I'm Dr. Carol Marshall from the National Department of Health, the Office of Standards Compliance. Thank you.
Honorable members and the department officials, the deputy minister, the last time we met, we had a problem. We should have been done with this bill. We had a problem of the versions on the bill, whether the provinces had to send a negotiating mandate with a version of a B or a G. And we asked the lawyers to go and sort it out. And they sent information to us through the email, I remember. Now, today, we got, our secretary got this document that says, our telephonic conversation refers, as stated, Advocate Pindela has spoken to Ms. Kasmeni and indicated that final mandate should be provided on the B version with amendments, which is in essence the D version of the bill. Still, with me, somebody who doesn't understand this legal language very well, I don't think I really understand what we should be having today. But fortunately, the Office of the Advocate has sent Shahida here, and we also have parliamentary legal advisor, whom I think they are going to give us one version. And that's what we will stick to. Now, even before they come, there was a confusion of another email that came. Be aware of that. So today, in case we don't find the versions correct after your explanation, I am telling you, we are not bringing this health department back. We will minute it and pass this bill. Thank you very much. It's over to you now.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members and Deputy Minister, members of the department, and all present. I am Shahida Bowers. I'm the procedural advisor in the NCLP. Advocate Pindela requested me to attend the meeting. We have been told subsequent to the last meeting that there was some confusion with regard to which version of the mandate, final mandate, should be provided on. In terms of the mandating procedures of Provinces Act, final mandates are provided at the committee stage and before the plenary stage. But the final mandate is usually also used as your voting mandate if there is no change in the province's vote when they come to plenary. So when you vote, when the province votes on a final mandate, it would either say we vote in favor or we vote against or we abstain from voting in the final mandate. Please be cognizant that at final mandate stage, there is no negotiating taking place any longer. Negotiation happened at your negotiating mandate phase. So when provinces are requested to submit a final mandate, that final mandate should be provided on the bill as received from the National Assembly to the NCLP committee, the select committee, with the amendments that the NCLP committee has effected, which they consider during negotiating phase of the cycle. So, am I understood at this point? Then we come to the final mandate stage. So now, if we've said that negotiating mandates have taken place, the committees has now, the provinces has now come back, they're now going to provide us with final, the committee with final mandates. It would be very confusing, and indeed it would not be
legally correct for a province to now provide a mandate on a B version of the bill? Because what in essence the provincial legislature would be saying is that we are now providing a mandate on the bill that was initially referred to the committee by the portfolio committee. So at that stage when it was referred, the select committee hasn't sat on the bill. It hasn't considered, deliberated, had negotiating positions on it, nothing. That is your B24B 2011. So if at final mandate stage you then provide a mandate, a provincial legislature, it is in fact saying that we are disregarding all negotiating positions on this bill. We want this bill as it was introduced in the, transmitted to the NCOP from the portfolio committee. So it would still be correct at final mandate stage for a provincial legislature's mandate to read, we vote in favor or against, or we abstain from voting on B24B with amendments, which says that they've taken into account the amendments that were proposed and agreed to by the committee. So what today the committee needs to have before it is your final mandate, which would say B24B with amendments, or if not, that wording, B24D. Those should be the only acceptable mandates to the committee. Because if we now go on further, we logically move further into the mandating process. And the committee now has to vote in the plenary. And they have a B24B, which the permanent delegate would have to stand up and say, The provincial legislature has conferred on me the authority to vote in favor of B24B that would not be an appropriate mandate given because it would disregard the committee process that the select committee has followed. This is with regard to when there's amendments on the bill. If there are obviously no amendments and the committee agrees with the portfolio committee version of the bill, as transmitted to the NCOP for concurrence, then it would remain, your final mandate would be on B24B. I trust that has provided some clarity on the matter, Chairperson.
Honourable Members, Honourable De Villiers Faber.
Chairperson, I understand fully the explanation in connection with the bill. But now from the Western Cape, I do have a problem because the wording of amendment is absent. So then from the Western Cape, the mandate, the final mandate on this bill is maybe one, incorrect, or two, that the Western Cape province give me the mandate to vote on the B24B without amendment. So that's a problem from my side now.
Yes, Honourable Chair, I don't know, maybe I've been taught wrongly, but from my understanding, it only becomes a D bill as soon as it's passed in the NCOP. Before it's been adopted and accepted in the NCOP, as provinces vote for it, it is still a B with amendments. As soon as it's passed in the NCOP and accepted, it becomes a D. So it can't be, you can't, according to what I was taught, say that it, you now accept a D bill here. So I am not on the same par as our friend here, because this is how I was taught, and I believe I was taught correctly. And except if she can show me on paper, otherwise I understand that it can only be a D bill when it is passed in the NCOP. I thank you very much.
Okay. Honourable Members, I think we had the same questions previous time. And we thought today we'll have the final thing. It says here, according to Shahida, if you say a B, then you must say with amendments. But in actual fact, we are expecting the D. That's what you said. Parliamentary legal person, can we hear from you?
before we take a decision.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have to agree with the Honourable Member Faber that the D version of the word, this has been some discussion in our office position from the Parliamentary Legal Advisors, is that it is a B version with amendments. The D version of the bill, and I'm sure committees also agrees with me, that the D version of the bill only comes in existence once there is a vote on it.
So the two people are not giving us the same thing. The parliamentary says today it must be a B until it is reported in the House. Different from what Shahida is saying. I'm not going to waste time, Honourable Members. We have annual reports to do. Honourable Blakey, then I will take a decision. Thanks.
No, I'm beginning to become very worried, Chair. Because even in our last meeting, we have actually said the same thing. We said the bill must stand as B24B with amendments. It must come today for finalization as such, then the D version in the voting process in the House, then we shall finalize it that way. We have agreed about this process, but I'm worried, why are we going in circles again, beginning to discuss the process that we have said it must go back to be corrected by all provinces. I can also see even my province, they brought back the same mandate, the B24B, you see, as just like last time, but it does raise concerns. So I'm worried about that we have asked Chairperson that the legal advisors, they must go and correct and bring the correction here in this meeting, but I can see that we're still sitting with the same confusion like last time.
And there's no agreement between the two. There is another legal advisor from Justice, if you can come in.
Can you use the mic?
Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you.
Technically, there is no D-bill. That is correct. Unfortunately, that is it. But the fact of the matter is we are now becoming technically to the extreme. In this instance, I mean, it is very it's obvious what the message was to the provinces. So I'm not sure whether this would be such a big flaw that it could stop it. I mean, everybody knows the D-bill. This is a fiction that there's no D-bill yet, but the D-bill that was sent to the people was the D-bill with the amendments. So, in that instance, although I agree totally with Gary, that should be the B-bill with the amendments.
Correct.
But in this instance, I mean, it's very clear what the D-bill is, the D-bill with the intention is very clear.
Thanks, Chair. our comment is that now this process is with the NCOP. The department does not have a view in terms of the processes. I think the parliamentary process must be clear to the legal advisors and the members. The bill is before the committee for them to adjudicate. We are here to give the assistance in terms of the technical issues on the bill. So in terms of the processes, that is not something that we wish to comment on.
Can I go to the secretary? Secretary, how many documents or how many provinces did what is correct? Yes. Okay, Honorable Faber. I was talking to the secretary to check for me.
Yes, Madam Chair. Yes, I hear what our learned friend behind me is saying, but you know what? We are here sitting as Parliament. Mm. We cannot adopt a D-bill. We cannot say the intention. I understand that the intention is there, but this is the highest house, and we cannot accept that people thought about it. It must be D or it must be A. It can't be D with the intention. D, it only becomes D when it gets passed in the NCOP. So, and that there's not a maybe this way or there. There's no grey area in this. This is left or it's right. You can't take the middle part, unfortunately. So, I will
Honourable
not...
Honourable Fab, I think you've made your point.
Yes, so Honourable Chair, I would suggest that in all provinces, we only need 5 mandates. So if there's 5 mandates which states 24B with amendments, I suppose we take those and we pass it on those. Thank you very much, Chair.
That's what I was trying to establish from the Secretary. Secretary?
Chairperson, we only have 3 mandates with the B version with amendments. Only 3 mandates stating B version with amendments.
Thank you very much. Now I have to make a ruling on this thing before we waste our time.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to just say a last, maybe that will, I don't know if it will save Mr. Faber. When you do make amendments to a B bill, you have a C list. Now, a C list cannot be read on its own. So you cannot send a C list on its own to the provinces. You send your B bill plus your C list, because your C list basically says insert the, or, you know, that kind of format. So your B bill plus your C list gives you a D version, and that is why in this instance the committee section has sent through a D bill. What the D bill is in essence is your B bill incorporating your amendments. So there would be nothing wrong for the committee to accept those mandates that say, as I said previously, B with amendments, because essentially it culminates in your D. But to vote on your D version is not incorrect. It is not incorrect. It is not at the end of this meeting when the committee has agreed, then a D gets produced. Officially it does, in the sense that it gets printed with a D number. But the committee is already considering a D version without that bill being printed as a D at this stage. So I still maintain my position that the committee is in essence considering, logically, if you take the argument to its logical conclusion, the committee is considering a D version of the bill. And it's not as if the committee has not already agreed on the negotiating mandates. This is to say yes or no, or I abstain. It's no longer a negotiating matter.
Thank you. Thank you for that explanation. May I ask now my parliamentary legal advisor, if we pass and finalize this mandate today, and we mean at it that there was this confusion of the B's and the D's, and we have agreed to go on, because the provinces are not against this bill. They agree to the bill. But now we just want to know, because this is on paper, that can we mean at it and allow the provinces to read their mandate, not considering the version, so that we finish this. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was writing you exactly that same note. You, the committee secretary can minister, can form part of the report that is then tabled in the House when the House takes a vote on the bill. So, I mean, for the sake of brevity, that can be done. So just make sure that the members who then read out the final mandate do minister it, so that it then is recorded in the record.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, the department, we are sorry for all this. We expected that today our provinces would have been fed with information that is correct, and still we can see that there is that gap about that. But we'll make sure that in January in our trainings we include this matter to be discussed very thoroughly. And we apologize to you, the department, for our, I don't know how to call ourselves here, but we have inconvenienced you in a way. It's not your matter. Now, I'm going to call provinces by provinces to read their mandate, whether they vote in favor or not. Please don't read many, just read what the final mandate says as we go. Eastern Cape.
The province supports the bill and mandates the Eastern Cape delegate to the NSUPO to vote in favor of the adoption of the bill.
Thank you.
Free State.
Free State.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. The Free State legislature vote in favor of the bill. Thanks.
Thank you.
The GP did not send its mandate. Gauteng. What follows? KZN.
Can somebody read
the mandate from KZN if it is there? It is here. Can you read it, Honorable de Villiers?
KZN, the mandate is to support the National Health Amendment Bill.
Thank you.
Limpopo? Thank you. Mpumalanga is myself. I will say in favor. I've been mandated to vote in favor of the bill. Northern Cape.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The National Amendment Bill B24B 2011 with amendments. The Northern Cape legislature supports it like that, correctly.
Western Cape.
Chairperson, the mandate is to support the bill.
Thank you very much. All province. Northern, no. Northwest. You need it more in the Northwest.
thank you, Chair. The Northwest province vote in favor of the bill with concerns raised.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, all nine provinces have voted for the bill. I will now read the report. It says the report of the Select Committee on Social Services National Health Bill 24B11, dated 27. The Select Committee on Social Services, having considered the subject of the National Health Amendment Bill 24B11, National Assembly 76, referred it to the classified by the JTM as a Section 76 bill, reports that it has agreed to the bill with proposed amendment are as follows. The report is the one that is to be considered. Can I sign? No. Thank you very much, honorable members. We are done with the amendment bill. And thank you very much to our liaison officers. I know you had a headache with this one. Thank you for your patience. just give them 5 minutes to go out and then 2 minutes and then we start. You can prepare for the next one. Thank you very much. We now continue with our program, the annual report briefing by the Department of Health. I know we have your time gone, but I'm going to plead with the department because I think we have meetings at 12:30 to make sure that at least say give by 12:30 got a pelile. So usually the 20 minutes is given to the members. Just assist me with that. Without wasting any time, I will give over to the Deputy Minister to lead us. Thank you, Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mayor Boroto and the Chairperson for today, and members of the Select Committee. We really want to appreciate the opportunity to present the annual report 2011-2012 to the NCOP, and indeed to acknowledge that if it was not of the input of the provinces that you represent, many of these achievements would not have been attained. And indeed, within the report that we have circulated prior, there are also challenges that have been highlighted. I would like to say on behalf of the Minister and the Department, the NHC in particular, including provinces, that by far the most the achievement that has made the most impact to the lives and the health of our people, our nation, is the achievement in the area of combating HIV and AIDS. And we have not as yet arrived in terms of optimally combating the epidemic, but we have certainly stabilized it. If you can visit the SA figures, it indicates that the South Africans have gained 2 years in their life expectancies. And we believe that the biggest contributing factor is around the program of combating HIV and AIDS. Secondly, also to say that the program has gone even beyond to look at sustaining the initiative of prevention. And by far, over the past 24 months, which started in the last financial year, the reduction in mother-to-child transmission of HIV from 8% to 3.5% last year and now to 2.7% in this financial year under discussion has been lauded internationally as a significant contribution to combating HIV AIDS. It may not come out very clearly, but in the negotiations of access to antiretroviral treatment, South Africa has also been lauded to have contributed to reducing the cost of antiretroviral medicine for the world because of our approach. For us, over a period, more than 4 billion rands has been saved in terms of the total cost, and has enabled us to increase access to people. I don't want to belabor this matter, but the significance is also that we now have a more productive society, we have less cost on illnesses, and we also have a better future for our children who are born without HIV. I'm aware that there were criticisms that we are now behaving like a department of HIV and AIDS. I want to state that by far the biggest burden that cut across was HIV and AIDS, as well as you know, TB, which has a comorbidity of about 73% with HIV. And what we've also found as we deal with the non-communicable diseases is that the comorbidity, people with HIV who now contract chronic diseases or non-communicable diseases, has also increased. They are more vulnerable to mental health problems, more vulnerable to cancer, and other non-communicable diseases. So it actually affected even non-communicable diseases. But we are really, really privileged that South Africans have worked with us. If it was not because of the leadership from the presidency, from President himself, the Deputy President, who chairs SANAC, the participants from other departments in SANAC, and also from society, these achievements would not have been registered. But I'm going to ask the honorable members to allow me to request the acting DG, Dr. Pillay, to take us through the substance, other areas of performance, and also the CFO later, just to touch on highlights on the budget performance. And I must say that we still are concerned about the expenditure on capital, on CAPEX, and we have had to put measures in place to deal with those. And in this year, we have also been we have started negotiations with Treasury on what we call non-negotiable, so that at the front line of services where our people access the health care, there are these non-negotiables that we contract with our people. And that would certainly help in dealing with some of the challenges and in strengthening our program of introducing the National Health Insurance System. I've asked Dr. Pillay to take into consideration that members have had the report for some time now. We were supposed to present it last time, and that we will just deal with highlights so that we give more time to members to ask more questions and engage with us. So with the CFO, they will just deal with highlights so that we have more time for members to engage with ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Over to Acting DG.
Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, colleagues, I'll go immediately to page 5, or slide 5, which basically highlights what we tried to achieve during the term of government, and the four outputs, which I think is well known now: increasing life expectancy, reducing maternal and child mortality, combating HIV and AIDS and other diseases, and strengthening the health system's effectiveness. And I think, as the Deputy Minister highlighted, we've already seen gains in all of these outputs. The next slide basically tries to align the 10-point plan, the four outputs that I've just mentioned, together with the health-related MDGs. And just to state, we are about 1,000 days now before the end of this period towards the MDGs. So we've got 1,000 days to achieve the MDGs. Moving quite quickly then to slide 7, which is program 1. The only two things I would like to highlight, the Honourable Chair, is the unqualified audit opinion that the Department of Health, the National Department, received for 2011-12. From the AG's office, and suggest that this is the second unqualified opinion in the last 3 years, and that with respect to provinces, there are still challenges with respect to provinces. Only 4 of the 9 provinces overspent their budgets. Well, I guess not only four of them have, and clearly that's a continuing concern. And the National Department has supported the provinces with respect to financial improvement plans. Moving on to Program 2, the achievements on health systems and systems enablement. We completed, like we do annually, and we've done this now for the last 12 or 15 years, we have an antenatal survey which looks at HIV and syphilis, page slide 9, and we now have a 20-year database on HIV prevalence amongst antenatal care attendees. The next slide speaks to research. One of the 10 points that we adopted in 2009 was about the importance of research. Under the leadership of the Deputy Minister in particular and the National Health Research Committee, a National Health Research Summit was held in July 2011 to identify the key areas that need further research. And this summit was supported by other government departments, NGOs, professional organizations, academics, and civil society. And this report, we are very proud to say, has been published in a very prestigious UK-based journal called The Lancet in April this year. Program two, continuing. We have been strengthening our monitoring and evaluation system, and we've been implementing what we've called a three-tiered system for antiretroviral therapy. And we've been in the process of implementing tiers one and two, with a fair amount of training being done in the provinces. Also, I think we would like to highlight the establishment of the Health Data Advisory and Coordinating Committee. And we have now, with a range of experts, produced estimates for life expectancy, infant mortality, child mortality, and maternal mortality. So we have some baselines, Honorable Chairperson, against which to monitor our progress. We have, as I think is well known now, established 10 pilot sites. KwaZulu-Natal has an additional pilot site, so 11 pilot sites in which we are piloting the National Health Insurance System. And we are using the conditional grant, which was approved by Treasury, to pilot a number of significant initiatives in each of these pilot sites in order to gear up towards the implementation of the National Health Insurance System. Moving on to slide 13. With respect to recruitment of students studying in Cuba. That slide basically suggests which provinces, there are seven of them, and the number of students that we have selected. And should there be time, we can also update the Honorable Members on what's happened since then with respect to recruitment of Cuban students to go to Cuba to study medicine. As is always the case, we identified a number of challenges that require remedial action on Program 2. And those are listed on page slide 14. And the key issue really is the liability of data. So it's really an issue about monitoring and evaluation and the use of data to monitor programs. We are aware of it, and we have a number of initiatives to strengthen our health information system in that regard. Moving on to the next slide, slide 15. Which talks about, as the Deputy Minister already suggested, our HIV and AIDS program. In that financial year, we put on treatment over 617,000 new patients on antiretroviral therapy. Within that financial year, 9.6 million South Africans accepted HIV counseling and testing, and cumulatively, more than 20 million South Africans have undergone HIV counseling and testing. Between when the President launched the program in April 2010 and June 2011. With respect to condom distribution, we exceeded the target that we have in our annual plan of 6 million female condoms by about 353,000. What we haven't got in that slide, Honorable Members, is the number of male condoms, but we'll come back to that. With respect to TB, we are slowly creeping into the 70s. We're now at 73% with respect to our cure rate. We had a target of 75% for that financial year, and this reflects an improvement from the previous financial year. The same is true of our defaulter rate. Our defaulter rate has decreased from 7% to 6.8%. We would like you to see it below 6% at least. With respect to maternal, child, and women's health, our immunization coverage, fully immunized under 1 year of age, stood at 95.2% against a target of 95%. And the next bullet really talks about what the Deputy Minister has already alluded to, and I won't comment much more on it. Safe to say that our prevention of mother-to-child transmission program appears to be working quite well. Next slide, which is slide 18. With respect to antenatal care, people are accessing antenatal care in the public sector. A big challenge, however, is early antenatal care. So you can see that the next bullet suggests that only 40% of women are accessing antenatal care in the first trimester, which is something that we need, I think, honourable members' support on the demand side to get people, pregnant women, to come for antenatal services as early as possible. However, once they come into our care, all of them are being tested for HIV, which is a pleasing result. Cervical cancer screening, as the Deputy Minister suggests, we're also looking at not only communicable diseases, but non-communicables as well, amongst the cancers. And cervical cancer screening, which is a communicable disease actually, is also on the increase. Slide 19, on medical male circumcision. Apologies for that abbreviation. It's an MMC, it's medical male circumcision, on page 19.
Not members of the
mayor and committee. Not members of mayor and committee. Because we don't have as many as we've done MMCs. So we've done a fair number of it against the target of 500,000 each year. Because, you know, we know that the science tells us that we can prevent a number of infections together with condom use. And there we have the number of condoms distributed. Now, we must, in the discussion, we will explain what the specific challenges are with condoms, male condoms. So, if the Deputy Minister just explain it now. So, one of the big challenges with male condoms is the supply of male condoms. So, during the last financial year, we had 10 suppliers through our tender process, but only 7 of them could supply. And of those, only 2 could supply the full amount that they were contracted to supply. And the big challenges really were around the availability of latex, you know, which is used to make condoms. So we've had significant challenges with getting into the country, the large numbers that we need. So this year we've also gone to the United Nations to see if we can't purchase condoms through the United Nations, which buys condoms for a number of countries. So we are in the process of discussing with them purchasing 500 million condoms, male condoms, through that process, because our current suppliers are unable to provide it. So moving on to slide 20, on the antenatals. Now the prevalence data that you see from antenatal survey should be going up, because the number of people who are HIV positive who are on treatment are going up. So what we would like to see is that number going up, because people are living longer, but the incidence, the new cases, should be coming down. So there shouldn't be any confusion about these two things. So prevalence is the new cases plus old cases, and the old cases are those that are living longer, whereas incidence is only new cases. So you can see if prevalence is stable or is going up with respect to HIV, that's not a bad thing, but incidence should be coming down. And the rest really talks to provincially what the provincial breakdown is with respect to HIV prevalence. We are in the process of completing the next antenatal prevalence, and the results should be made available early next year. The next slide also talks about the antenatal prevalence, and I won't go to it. It's just showing you that the Central Karoo in the Western Cape still has the lowest HIV prevalence at 0.8%. Moving on to Program 4, which is primary health care. I think honourable members' attention should be drawn to the fact that primary health care utilisation is at 2.5 visits per person, against the target of 2.6, so it's going up, but there's some variation across provinces, with some provinces over 2.5, close to 3, and others under 2. With respect to vitamin A coverage, again, it's moving up quite nicely. It's moved beyond the target for those children aged 1 year to 5 years old. And as I think honourable members know, the minister has mandated that we strengthen primary health care by using it. 3 streams of primary healthcare re-engineering. That last bullet on slide 22 talks to one of those 3 streams, the ward-based outreach teams, and we've created a fair number of those teams against the target we had set ourselves. We also, because as the Deputy Minister said, non-communicable diseases and chronic diseases are becoming such a big problem, and HIV is now a chronic disease, we are looking at reviewing and revising the way in which our health services operate through what's called the integrated chronic disease model. And we have 41 facilities in 3 districts in 3 provinces now implementing this model. And we can say more about it should there be questions from our members later. On page 24, I think as honourable members know, injuries and trauma are a significant burden of disease now and a source of concern. And we, together with other government departments, have taken the lead to provide to produce a strategic framework for the prevention of injury in South Africa. And the last bullet basically suggests the stakeholders that we, together with whom we develop this strategic plan. Moving on to slide 25, which talks about district hospitals, and I think as honourable members can see that we try to measure the efficiency of our district hospitals using a number of measures. Bed utilization rate has gone up, but is still not at the target of 70%. The average length of stay is 4.3 days. It's still slightly over target, so we need to work harder at improving efficiencies in our district hospital. The primary healthcare supervision is at 66% against the target of 70%. And we've conducted a review of hospital performance indicators together with the Health Systems Trust. Moving on to Program 5, which is hospitals, tertiary services, and the workforce development. As I think honourable members know, we have now a workforce strategy which responds to the changes that we have made in our service delivery platform, and this was launched on the 1st of October 2011, and a rural health workforce strategy has been incorporated into this plan. With respect to community health workers, we completed an audit of community health workers in order to be the forerunner to the re-engineering of primary healthcare and to come up with a new model, which is the ward-based model. With respect to technicians that would service our health technology, all the machines in the hospitals and the equipment, we have trained 42 technicians at the Swana University of Technology, and that's a very important contribution to quality of care. Moving on to slide 28. On health program 6, health regulation and compliance management, I don't think I have to say anything more about bullet 1. That has been a source of much discussion in this committee, including this morning, and we're very grateful that you have passed it, and it's just the House to pass it. In terms of an audit of our facilities, this audit has now been completed. So all over 4,000 facilities have been audited against a whole range of indicators. So we know what the status of each of our health facilities in the public sector is. And there are teams now that are working with provinces and facilities to come up with improvement plans. And Ms. Volmerans here is one of the key people in the department that are leading that. So in question time, she might want to raise a few things there. The establishment of the new SAPRA, the Pharmaceutical and Related Products Regulatory Authority, was approved by Cabinet, and the amendment bill was served at Parliament. The new triple-dose, fixed-dose combination for antiretrovirals was finalized. And as the Deputy Minister said, we've spent a lot of effort trying to reduce the burden on patients and also on society with respect to our antiretroviral program. There's still some challenges that remain. One of the challenges is the registration of medicines. That's our Medicines Control Council. That continues to be a challenge with backlogs, but there's been some improvement. As you can see, a total of 386 generics were registered against within a 34-month period, whereas our target is 18 months. So you can see there's still a big challenge with respect to registration by the Medicines Control Council. Moving on to slide 31, with respect to complaints. Many of the complaints, Honourable Chair, are complaints at facility level and within provinces, and you know, we need to then work with the provinces to get the complaints resolved, and that's one of the challenges in meeting the 25-day turnaround time with respect to complaints. But we have now a database of complaints in the National Department, and we are able to more effectively monitor progress in responding to complaints. So that, Honourable Chairperson, Deputy Minister and members, is a very quick overview of the performance of the department together with continuing challenges. And the next section is the budget, and I'll hand over to the CFO to take us through the budget, with your permission.
Thank you, Chair members. Just briefly, we'll look at the expenditure of the department against budgets. First on slide 32, you'll see that administration as an underspend or total spending of 95%, underspend by 15 million, the same with our program 2, health systems, planning system enablement. The HIV program underspend by 87.6 million, which is 99% of total budget. On the next slide, at the bottom, it shows the bottom line expenditure of the department. It had a final appropriation of 25.9 billion. against a spending of 25.7 billion, equating to a 255 million underspend, or equal to 99% of the total budget that was spent. The further detail of the expenditure in terms of classifications, compensation of employees showed an underspending of 15.4 million, equating to 96.4%, and our biggest underspend, Chair, was in goods and services, and we'll give you some explanation now about that. But we spent 74.8% of the budget, which equates to 226 million saving or underspending for the financial year. The various explanation for administration is basically that on our capital expenditure, there was some IT equipment not delivered before the year end, which we could not build for. There was also the issue on goods and services, where the funds for the statistics publication was not done in time, and our provincial support units and tariff review system could not be fully utilised. In fact, this is still a bit of a pressure for us in this financial year, and we've made some amendment in terms of transferring it probably to the MRC as well. The health planning and system enablement program showed a total spending of 91% of budget. The other spend is mainly attributed to the low spending on some NHI funding received, and also the technical policy and planning units was mostly inactive, as we only finalized the panel of experts towards the end of the financial year. So hopefully in this year we've got a technical expert panel that we've appointed, which should make our procurement process quicker and also assist with upping our expenditure. On Program 3, as Dr. Pillay explained, the underspend was due to the late finalization of the condom contract, as well as the issues to do with the latex availability and the general availability of condoms. Program 4, we had an underspend of 20 million basically due to the late delivery of influenza vaccines. We've asked for this funds to be rolled over, which was granted, and we've actually spent a large portion of this funds in the first half of this financial year. The hospital and tertiary and services and workshop development program showed underspent mainly because our nursing college project did not materialize as expected, and we were also not billed properly by the DBSA and CSIR for funds on the IUSS, the Infrastructure Unit Support System. So those funds, again, was requested for rollover to be spent when invoices were verified proper. The Health Regulation and Compliance Management Program was underspent by about 23 million, mainly due to the establishment of the Office of Standards and Compliance that we've discussed today as well. Chair, the opinion this year has improved from a qualified to unqualified opinion for this financial year. We've done a lot of work in terms of dealing with our assets, dealing with our regular expenditure, wasteful expenditure. So some of the issues that were raised in the previous financial years were not raised again in those respects, although we still know we have to do quite a bit to keep and maintain it to that level. But the matters that were raised by the AG can be summarized in the following ones: the employees that were appointed without following a proper process of verification of the applications in terms of the PSR regulations. Not all senior managers have signed performance agreements as required by the public service regulations. A human resource plan was not in place. There were some findings raised on the NGO funding and the monitoring of those funds and if they've been transferred for the intended purposes. And then we've had a number of findings on the DORA requirements, especially on the monitoring of expenditure and non-financial information on the following grants: HIG, which is the infrastructure grant, the training and development grant, the tertiary services grant. In some instances, we did not transfer in time as well, although there is a mitigating factor that the DORA was approved slightly late towards in the financial year. There's also arrangements in terms of the DORA for the, especially the Revive grant, the pathology grant,
and the HIV grant that was not adequately adhered to, and then two grants were not approved prior to the start of the financial year. So we've looked at all those issues, Jay. The next one. We've come up with the following recommendations, and we've worked closely with the AG in terms of looking at what needs to be done. We have in place a proper protocol with the AG, which regulates our steering committee meetings. We've got weekly steering committee meetings with them, where we discuss all the requests for information as well as the queries that they've raised. We've developed implementation plans, especially on the NGOs, conditional grants, and the HR. And Chair, to be honest with you, these plans should not be difficult to implement. You know, it's this question of monitoring the dates for DORA and making sure that we adhere to those. So we've got a strong plan in place. I must say, for the first quarter, it was still a bit of a challenge again because the DORA was approved late. But there's no excuse really for us in terms of the second quarter to ensure that those dates are being met proper. The risk that there might be a future audit risk, the way you put it, is inventory. Inventory is a new aspect that the AG is going to start looking at, and we need to prepare for that as we are doing. We have to report properly this financial year on the inventory, and we really would not like it to become another asset management issue where it drags on for years until we get to properly handling it. I'll just briefly take you through the conditional grant expenditure of provinces. The first one is the National Tertiary Services Grant. The total spend was 99% by the end of the financial year. We've had some provinces underspending significantly, so probably Northern Cape underspending on this grant. And Chair, this grant is not one that actually should be underspent. It's a grant that gets transferred to supplement the equitable share, and provinces need to take care that they transfer or generalize expenditure back to this grant on a monthly basis. The next grant is the HIV and AIDS grant. There was a 97% spend in total on this grant. Most provinces, or three provinces, have actually overspent on this grant, which means that the balance of that funds would then be debited against the equitable share. But provinces like Free State, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, were significantly underspent on this grant. Many reasons have been raised for this, like the suppliers not being able to be registered on their database, the procurement of ARVs not being done properly by the provinces, as well as the issue of condoms as raised by Dr. Pillay. The pathology grant has shown a 99% expenditure. This is the last year that this grant will be in its current form. From next year, provinces need to make available funds from equitable share to cover this expenditure. We have noticed over the last few years that this grant in particular was not well managed. Although this is last financial year, the expenditure has actually picked up quite nicely, especially in the last three quarters. Provinces like Eastern Cape have finalized a lot of their projects. They spent 126% of their budgets. And apart from Gauteng and perhaps Limpopo, most provinces have actually spent most or all of the funds on this grant. The REVITE grant stands at 99%. And again, Chair, you will notice that we've had some mixed results across provinces. Some provinces have really underspent quite a bit, like Limpopo and Mpumalanga. And at national, we've introduced the program management support unit under the infrastructure unit support system, together with DBSA and CSIR, to give some institutional support to provinces. We're seeing those results in pockets in provinces, especially like Free State, Eastern Cape, and KZN. Especially this year has shown marked improvement in terms of spending. We will see from this that Eastern Cape and KZN have already sort of got some momentum in terms of the expenditure trends, and they've spent most of their budgets and all. The train development grant is at 101% spent, slightly overspent, so the balance will be debited against equitable share. But most provinces in this case have spent the funds transferred to this to them. This grant, the same as the NCSG, is also a Schedule 5, which means it gets
transferred as part of the equitable share or as a supplement to equitable share. Health infrastructure grant, pretty much the same trend as the Revive grant at 97% spent. Northern Cape, KZN and Eastern Cape with the most overspent, Free State in this case, together with Mpumalanga has shown an underspend in this, on this grant. Chair, some other transfers that we do to you can go to Malay. Other transfers that we do to entities include the Medical Research Council. The funding for this year under review was 271.2 million transferred to them, mostly scientific research on clinical and health issues. The National Health Laboratory Services also receives funding from us, although very small in this case. It amounted to 82.1 million. But the major source of income, obviously, is charging provinces for all the analytical laboratory services from provincial departments. The Medical Schemes Council received a 4.1 million transfer from the province, but they also essentially funded mainly through levies that they collect in terms of the Council of Medical Schemes Levies Act. SANEC, the trust was dormant throughout the financial year. They've recently appointed a CEO, and this, we expect that this trust will be operational by the end of this financial year. Already, we intend to transfer or to convert their allocation into a transfer that will be transferred to them on an annual basis. The Minor Workers Compensation Fund, or as we talk about it, is the CCRD, Compensation Commissioner for Occupational Diseases, has received 2.77 million for the year under review. It also raises revenue through levies, and the value of the fund is estimated to just be over a billion rand as it stands. So Vivian can do the conclusion.
Thanks. So just to conclude, members, we are just summarizing. I've talked about life expectancy. There are the figures there that indeed South Africans have gained 2 more years of life expectancy, and that's also good for our economy to reduce also the issues of social problems like that are associated with orphans. In terms of maternal and child mortality issues, there's also quite significant improvements. You'll notice that under maternal mortality ratio, the initial figure before we have cleaned our data, working together with experts from WHO and other areas, we had a figure of about 600 per 100,000. We have revised it down with the advice from the expert committee to 310. So we're monitoring that very closely as well. The figures are still quite high, so we're working very hard on those things. And we're very excited that we indeed got an unqualified audit opinion. And the issue of the minister has launched the campaign on the accelerated reduction of child and maternal mortality in Africa, which ask members to help also oversee its implementation in various provinces, as well as the integrated school health program, which was launched by the president. We are also asking members to also help oversee the performance of provinces in this area, but we are working very closely with MECs. I'm not going to overemphasize the issue of HIV, AIDS, and TB, except to say that Western Cape should also, we're working with the Western Cape not to be complacent, because you'll see that there is an increase stated there, though it's more attributable to a larger sample, especially with the issue of TB, which is the prevalence is highest in the Western Cape. There is a need to be much more to monitor closely that we don't have HIV getting out of control because of being complacent. And KZN still has the highest burden, but it has really surpassed all other provinces in terms of improvement. including also in the issue of transmission from maternal to child. And it's also because of we would like members to take interest in the approach that the KZN has adopted in strengthening ward-based, municipal ward-based systems. That is one of the attributable key performance areas. If they continue like that, they will certainly be able to contain the HIV and related diseases better. In this year, we've also adopted the Human Resources for Health strategy, and part of it is also complemented by increasing the number of doctors that are trained in Cuba. In this financial year under discussion, the minister took a lot of effort to engage with the deans and vice chancellors of medical schools. We have 8 medical schools in our country to increase the number of the production of doctors. The intake in South Africa is about 1,200 amongst all the 8 medical schools, and that is certainly far from being adequate. And that is why this year we then accepted the offer that was made in 2010 by Cuba to train 1,000. We have, I think, more than 800 confirmed students in this regard. But what I'm excited about, because I'm helping the minister on this one, is that all the 8 medical schools, the teams, are working with us to make sure that they increase the training platform. Because when the students come back, their final year has to be in these medical schools. And if you think of it, if our intake in this in the country of 8 medical schools is 1,200 students, and we have an additional 1,000, it means that during their 6 years, when they come back here, the universities must have doubled their capacity. So we are looking at this program revolutionizing the way medical training is done by using also the districts, for instance, and regional hospitals as training platforms, and therefore strengthening the accessibility of experts at local level. The minister's introduction of the district specialist will also help in increasing the training platforms accordingly. We're also looking at all other categories of staff, nursing. We've established the chief nursing officers, office in the department to follow up the outcome of the nursing summit that we've had. On issues of quality over and above the office that we're establishing, as I've indicated, there are non-negotiables that we are working on, and this includes issues of cleanliness, looking at the expenditure issues around that, so that when provinces are under pressure, they don't divert funds from these non-negotiables. And that's cleanliness, that's security services for the safety of patients and staff, the laundry services, catering, laboratory services, blood and blood products, vaccines and medicines, infrastructure, as well as medical equipment. So just in summary, members, we believe we have advanced. In some instances, we've even exceeded the targets of 2014 that we have set in the negotiated service delivery agreement already now mid-term. But we still have a long way to go in others. And we are privileged that you have also assisted in your inquiries and oversight and contributions in us registering these achievements. And we're committed to deal with the challenges that remain. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister. Before I give to the members to ask clarifications and questions, I must just say that what you have given us, we understand it very well, because it is happening. This department is really trying its best, but I will come back again. But thank you very much for what you are doing for this country so far. And I'll give this to the honorable members.
I'll start the end in that order, coming this way.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Slide number 18. On slide number 18, whether it's a mistake or is there a specific reason why Western Cape is not among the provinces that have sent people to Cuba? And then, now towards the end, conditional grant expenditure. I see similarly in all these categories or in all these programs, is there a reason why Eastern Cape has far exceeded its budget? I mean, over expenditure, and it's almost consistent in all of this. And I mean, where do they get the additional funds? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My first question is in connection with the vacancy rate of the department. Can you just give us an updated information? What is the percentage of the vacancy rate, especially in connection with the senior management? Because it's very and it's vital important that we must address that situation. Then in connection with the skills management in finance and performance management also, this problem was actually identified also by the AG, and what are you currently doing to try and address this so that at the end of the financial year there is something happening in the department. Chairperson, also in connection with the asset management, if there's not a proper system and the implementation of that system in the department, then I can understand, and it will actually happen, that the assets of the Department of Health will get lost or stolen, and there's no proof of what we have and what is actually lost. How quickly can you address that situation? Because it is very important. It is not the Department of Health who will lost that asset, but actually the community where those hospitals and clinics are in that area, especially in the rural area, it's very important. And then the last one, Honorable Chairperson, is, no, the second last one, is in connection with the training of doctors. If my information and understanding is correct, there's no students from the Western Cape identified to be trained in Cuba. And then you mentioned about the, I think it's 1,000 doctors coming from there, and then the final year, I think, is here in the university or the medical school at the university. Now, I want to find out what is the higher education and training department doing, and work together with the minister to help and address that problem, because we can't let them just be stagnant and the Department of Health do want to address the shortage of doctors, but from that side there's no support. Just that information. And then the last one, Honorable Chairperson, in connection with the male circumcision. You mentioned about the doctors who could not complete or do the operation. Let me just put it in that way, the operations on the circumcisions of men. Now, what is currently happening at our hospitals so that our doctors can be available to address this problem? Because from my information, to address or to help the department and actually our government to address the, how can I put it, to lower the infection of HIV/AIDS. This is one of the goals identified. Now, if the doctors can't actually help us in that situation, then we won't succeed in our goals. Now, what is actually going inside the medical fraternity to help and address that problem? Is it also the situation that the doctors can't do that operation, or is it actually that the workload is too many, and that is the reason why we cannot reach our target? Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Can I go back to Honourable Farmer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry that I had to run out, but I had to first get some information because I had to pose a question. The first one I would just like to know, I see there's 10 pilot projects on the NHI. I would just like to know which provinces and where they are, and exactly how do you enroll these programs? Because, I mean, you see what I'm trying to say, how do the people know that, because if you look at the whole national NHI, how it works, how do you actually implement it then at that specific places? That's the one question. And then, Deputy Minister, as we've got the privilege of having you here, it's not cornering you or anything, but, you know, in the Northern Cape, we've got that psychiatric hospital in Kimberley that was supposed to be around about 350 million, which is now already at 1 billion, and still not even close to completion. I want to know I'm looking at these conditional grants, and I'm trying to figure out the only place where I could see where the Northern Cape really overexpended was on the 117% or something, and that was on health infrastructure. Now, I want to know, is that part of that health infrastructure where they've now overspent to try and finish it? And then as well, what I understand is that money was also transferred from the project in the R hospital to the psychiatric hospital in Kimberley. Now, that is not legal. You're not allowed to take from one project to the other, as far as I understand, because that is apparent. Am I correct on the Board of Villiers? You're not allowed to do that. When we were on the oversight, that was on our Parliament to the People, that was the one problem that we did encounter, because you're not allowed to take from this one hospital away to the psychiatric hospital, and then the MEC told us no, but they're waiting for some grants still from national. Yes, they must have, as Honourable de Villiers says, as I understand, permission from Treasury. But if you can perhaps enlighten us on that, because I get thrown with questions. We already posed it to Minister Aaron as well, but up to right now we have no information on that, and I think all the NCFP members that was in the R were also asked on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, maybe I must start with the... I know that this question has been posed so many times by my colleagues, but I want to put up another angle on it, the training of doctors in Cuba or elsewhere. I'm raising this question, Chair, with reference to an oversight that we did in Colesberg, the area where there is absolutely no doctor in the hospital. In actual fact, if you want to see a doctor, you must make an appointment, and you will be queued in a list. I don't know at what time are you going to see the doctor. So I'm asking, does these numbers indicated here reflect, or is it the same number as the number that the province is sending doctors to Cuba, or does the national department have their own recruitment in terms of taking no student to Cuba against the provinces? Because I am asking this question, Chair, on the basis that you would read in other information from provinces that they'll be telling you that, for example, I'm told Free State has sent about 150 students to Cuba or something like that. Does this, their number, do they report to the national about their number of recruiting students to Cuba, so that you actually verify the number per province of students who went to Cuba? That's the first question that I wanted to pose, Chen. Now you will understand why I'm asking it. I said to my friend, a colleague of mine in, what is that place, DR, fell sick. We were sitting in the same hotel. He had to drive the whole town without seeing a doctor. And it was very, very, very pathetic and painful. So he was sent to a district clinic elsewhere, only to be given some kind of medication there. There's no doctors in the Northern Cape. And the other point is on the finances, CFO. What I want to check with you, what are the negative impact, if any, does the provincial audit outcome have on your national? Because all the time, you will see that provinces, if it's not disclaimer, it's unqualified and so or adverse. So I want to check now, what does these things have to do with your finances at a national level? And the other point, I've raised this point many a times, this question, but apparently there's no some kind of system. If you have developed a system of actually putting some kind of consequences for provinces who does not actually spend their budget accordingly. So provinces will have their budget and money. They would use it in any way. They would have adverse report or disclaimer, but there are actually no compelling, no consequences for provinces to make sure that they go out of that problem. And the other one is on the supervision and management of health facilities, such as hospital. Chair, I'm asking this question because I am aware in terms of the department's attempt to improve health services in South Africa. But there are still pockets of extremely appalling situations where in hospitals, people giving birth in pavements because of the attitude of staff in hospital. Some they are told, you can just go out. When they go home, they give birth in the pavement. It happened in one area in Bloemhof in the Northwest Province. I read about another situation in Gauteng on the same situation. So this kind of supervision, making sure that your department is sending people to make sure that these facilities actually treat people in a professional way. Why can't you have constant people making unannounced visits to this institution or facilities to ensure that there's no deviation in terms of the standard that you want to put? I think that would be my last question, Chair.
Sir, I just want to add on what Honorable Blakey has just said on the conditions of hospitals and the monitoring system that is not there. I think it goes back to the human resource that we have in our hospitals, because if there is no senior person in the evenings for looking or for monitoring the situation in each department, like in the maternity department, in whatever department that is there in the hospital, that also needs to be taken care of, because when the department is doing its budget, I think the department should consider those things. My first question, Chairperson, would be on the department knows that we are representing provinces, and I think in the past few weeks my province was one of the provinces where that the people, the health people, were on strike. It's all over. It's known all over that they were on strike. The emergency people want to be on permanent basis, want their overtime money, and also who want to be permanent. They want the money of accidents that they I think there is money that they are being given on when they are going to an accident scene or whatever.
those things, I think the national department should engage the provinces in dealing with those problems, because at the end of the day, I think it also reflects on your annual audit as a department, as it affects the budget of the department also. In slide, the program 3 on HIV and AIDS and tuberculosis, unless I've written something on top of the slide now, I can't see the number of the slides. It's 15, yeah? It says on achievements, the department has achieved on antiretroviral treatment, new patients that are on antiretroviral are 6 million. 617,000 compared to 400, it looks like an achievement to me, but to me it's not an achievement. The achievement that we are supposed to get is to get less people that are on ARVs or antiretroviral treatment, because we need to fight the disease so as to get less people. But I just want to know, does the department have a program to visit the rural areas? I'm from a rural area that in Lady Grey, next to Lady Grey, there is an area called Rhodes. Rhodes. It's a small area, but it has got a lot of people because it's a ward on its own. And I think, yeah, they do get services, but because that place is also having the people of that area, they are on the land of a private person, so it is not easy for me to have programs from my constituency office to have programs or that I can do on that area because of the private land or private ownership of that land. Do you have programs? Do you monitor those programs that are being happening in the district? Do you have somebody that is working from the national department to the district so as to visit also the most rural area that is in Sterkspruit, ePhelandaba? Do you have such programs that you have as a department on MDGs, are we achieving, especially on HIV and AIDS, because South Africa is also one of the countries with high prevalence of HIV AIDS, are we achieving, are we still having challenges as the government to achieve those MDG goals, especially on this infectious disease, especially HIV and AIDS? On slide number 27, 28, it says by March 2012, 90% of facilities had undergone baseline audit conducted by HST. I just want to know, now that you've got the audit results, is there a program in place to follow the audit data? Because I'm thinking of, we've got we've conducted the audit the baseline audit. What are we doing after auditing this? What are we doing with our findings as a national department? Also, last night I was listening to the minister talking about the boilers of hospitals in Limpopo that we visited when we went on the program of the intervention program. I just wanted to check with you as a department. I'm not sure did I listen very well. Do we have a person or yeah, personal staff that are going around with technical or technicians or with whatever around the hospitals in the countries, because I'm worried to have this problem in or this challenge in the hospitals of Limpopo, and again having them in Eastern Cape or in KZN, whereas we know some of the systems that the machines that we have, they are old in the hospital, they need a renewal. Do you have a program to prevent this not to happen in other provinces? On NHI will be implemented. It's a good program. It's a good initiative. But our hospitals and clinics, are they ready? Are they ready to implement this NHI? Do we have now committed people, or do we have a program for people that are working in hospitals, or a way of boosting their morale as people who are working in hospital, as to be able to implement this NHI properly in each and every hospital, in each and every clinic, because we lack a personnel that has got a passion of the job. What is the department doing on those personal attitudes with our staff members in the thanks.
Thank you, and I must say to you, honourable members, I won't give you a second chance because of time. That's why I allowed everybody to just flow with their questions. Before we give over to the Deputy Minister, or on the issue of Western Cape that was asked by honourable civilians, even Free State doesn't appear there. Maybe you can tell us why. There's this issue of the organogram in health establishments, the organogram versus the reality on the ground. There's a serious gap, vacancy-wise. As we do our visits to hospitals and clinics, that's one thing that we have discovered, that the organogram of these institutions is not followed as it's supposed to be, and that creates a serious problem. So that attaches the vacancies. On the non-negotiables, you know, as I said when we started, I said this department has tried all it could to come up with the issues or, you know, documents that will assist the health situation in this country. But we have one problem. There are documents. Very good. Implementation at institution level is not happening. You know, I can just tell you, I went to one that we did an unannounced visit on, and we were using these documents of the non-negotiables and the one for the core standards as we went there with the group that I went with, including clinic committee members and so on. There was a laundry machine that has been stuck for more than 3 months. Everything inside is rotting. I'm just giving that example. I don't want to talk about in this one consulting room, the doctor had machines that have not been working for 2 years. The sauna, the ones that goes into the ears, you know, all that. So once we say negotiables, who is responsible for monitoring that it is happening? Because honestly speaking, we took this thing even to the district offices. We gave them the report, they reported, they gave us answers, but nothing. Actually, we need to, if we don't have a person, a particular structure that is there for monitoring, something must be done along those lines. They are good, and I think it is a must that every hospital should have that.
But the unfortunate part is that it's not happening. They are not cleaning materials. We talk infection control in those fast-track ones. Which, how effective are we with infection control? In that hospital that we visited, it's obvious that infection control they don't even consider, because what I did, the first thing was I would come in a ward and say, where are their bathrooms? And that's where you could see blood on the windows as you pass by the passages and all that. We did report that anyway to the district. But I'm just saying, the documents are good, the proposals are good, but implementation at the level of the establishment is my problem. Now, the other thing as I speak about that is the procurement issues. I don't know if we will have better ways of procuring, because when you ask, for instance, why is this not cleaned, why are you not having, you know, for disinfectants for the bathrooms and so on, we have ordered since when, you know, all those excuses. Now, who over makes sure that that happens? The attitude, I think they've already talked about attitude. When we go out, we always have a problem of attitudes with our hospital staff. I'm not sure, but the nurses mostly. You will be assisted there, but you will have a problem. And, you know, this thing of attitude, even when we went to take in Parliament to the people in Northern Cape recently, I think that was also mentioned about the attitudes. I'm not saying you can answer now, but I think it's something that you should have a plan on, of working on. Maybe the reskilling and recapacitating of our people. This demoralization, that they are demoralized, whatever. Maybe those are the things. The last question that I will talk about is not actually, what are the reporting lines? So that this issue reaches you as a national health department, because, you know, when I went for this oversight, we went to a pharmacy in that hospital, and this lady who is the senior one in that pharmacy was complaining so much. Then I said to her, what do you do? Do you write monthly reports or quarterly reports for all the issues that you are raising with us? And I said, no, I don't do that, because we have been doing that, but you don't get any assistance from the upper structures. So I've been here for more than a year, I've never written a report. Can you imagine working, being an overseer of a particular group in a particular structure, as I say, in the dispensary, for instance, and there's no report that you are sending out for what happens there? You only order. If medicine doesn't come, you sit. You don't worry. Those are the things that worries me, that we come up as national, you come up with all these good documents that you even us are able to use when we do our oversight. We use those documents because we believe they are very correct. But the people on the ground don't even know what are those core standards. Don't even know what is the, what you call them, there's 1 up to 7, I think. They don't even know what those are, infrastructure requirements, patients' rights, all the, they don't know, but they are in the institutions. What do we do? I think that is where we are lacking, implementation and making sure that what we propose and what we put on paper is being implemented. Thank you, Deputy Minister. I'll give over to you for the responses.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and members. I will try to be as comprehensive as possible, but brief, understanding that our engagement with the committee is on a continuous basis. So that if there are areas where we need to come back to engage further, I think we should be able to do that. I will try to go through the questions and also identify areas where I would seek the acting DG and the team to assist in. Firstly, I think from
Member Makunyane on slide 13. My understanding is that Western Cape has never participated in the program for training undergraduate medical doctors in Cuba since the program started in 1997. I've had engagements with the MEC, very positive meeting, I must say, and the province feels they do not have that much of a shortage of doctors, and for the shortfall they are able, or they would be able, to engage with the two universities in their province to accommodate them. But I must say that there are students from poor areas in the Western Cape who have also raised concerns with us that they do not have access to these opportunities. And we have agreed with the MEC that he will look into the situation as well. Because even though we do have high quality training of medical doctors, we still have a challenge that many of them do not prefer to service public health systems in our country. And that is an issue, Chair, also on the issue of Free State. In this year, I think, didn't send any students, but Free State has been participating. It's just that in this particular year of reporting, they didn't send students. And so what we, the higher education department, one member raised it, I'll identify it when I come to it, is working with us to deal with this matter. And they participated in the workshop that we held with the universities, the 8 medical schools. So we are working with them to ensure that they also first recognize that this is their mandate, and that there's also a need to review the funding mechanism, because all students that go to schools, whether medical or otherwise, in South Africa, higher education subsidizes them. But these particular ones, because they are not studying in South Africa, although they are sent by South Africa, they do not as yet qualify for that subsidization. So we are looking at all these technical issues with the Ministry and Department of Higher Education. So we are starting to work with them in that regard. I think it's Member de Villiers who raised that issue. On the issue of Eastern Cape exceeding its budget, I'm just going to ask the CFO to deal with that matter in particular. But generally, I think it's a specific issue on this particular budget item. We must remember that departments, provinces don't only spend on the grants that we are reporting on. They also spend on the equitable share, a part of infrastructure. So when we look at expenditure on infrastructure comprehensively of a province, we should also bear that in mind. But certainly on this specific one, the CFO will give us feedback. On Member de Villiers, the issue of vacancy rates in the department, since the beginning of the term, 2009, we sought to align the new mandate with the structure, so that structure follows strategic objectives. And we first started with auditing the current status of the competencies that are there, especially in management at head office, the required and the gap that is there. So, and the most appropriate structure to respond. So we took almost over a year having a structure in limbo so that we align. So we have finalized that, and we have also consulted with the Department of Public Service Administration. We have established a new structure that is more responsive. Like, for instance, we have a DDG now responsible for HIV/AIDS, TB, and maternal and child health, because those are key programs, which is Dr. Jorgen Pillay, and so forth. We have a DDG responsible for primary health care, because it's a key driving force in reducing burden of disease and the cost also of health care and quality issues. We have a DDG also responsible for tertiary, which is including central hospitals and HR. So we have been able to align with the priorities. So we took a bit of time to fill this post because we needed to align, and also in consultation with the Public Service Administration. I think, members, what our commitment is that in this financial year that we are in, there would be great improvement in this regard. We filled most of those posts. We also have one of the DDGs here, Menno Bayeni, who has joined us in this room as well. And I think in this during this report, was the CFO already appointed? You were appointed after, during this financial year. So we filled a number of those posts. In terms of skills management and performance, indeed, this is one area, and a lot of people were also acting as a result of the change. So the performance management system was not tightened. When I reviewed the those that have signed performance agreements as of mid-year this year, this financial year, there were only four senior management that had not signed the performance agreement. And also it was around issues of roles in those areas. So we have improved currently on these issues. And I agree with you that these are key areas of ensuring improved performance. On asset management, indeed the fact that we have an unqualified audit this year, the AG recognizes the improvement. Just also to appraise Member De Villiers that this does not include hospitals and clinics, this audit of asset. It includes a head office and all other national services that we provide, which incorporates the foreign forensic laboratories and related structures that are under this budget vote. So the hospitals and clinics would be under the provinces, provincial asset register. But we agree with you that we must build on the progress that the AG has identified. In terms of training of doctors, I think I have responded to this one. Medical male circumcisions, what has been done, I'll ask the acting DG to respond to that. Safe to also add that we're working with the private sector also to complement, to deal with the increased demand in this area. Member Faba, the 10 pilot projects of NHI is one in each district. Sorry, in each province, one district in each province, and the minister has discussed with the MECs. So they have jointly agreed on the pilot site, and we decided that we must remain with the commitment for the 10 that we made prior. So KZN, because of the high disease burden, also fueled by the HIV/AIDS burden, and the fact that it is also having quite a large rural component compared to Gauteng, which has the highest population but less rural component. The decision was that KZN will then have that additional 10. But KZN executive had already identified a provincial site for also piloting over and above the national site. So KZN as such has three sites, two that have been nominated by national and one that they themselves have added to look at preparing themselves to roll out when that time comes. And indeed, the criteria was a mixed criteria. The rural issues were taken, the rural component was taken into consideration, the disease burden was taken into consideration. Also the issue of areas where we can also have quick wins, where there is availability of infrastructure and resources. For instance, that's one of the reasons that Tshwane was also so identified. If you can look at the characteristics of Tshwane, it has a very strong urban node, but also a high peri-rural or peri-urban area as well. So we can share with you the criteria, the full criteria that was used, but it was in consultation also with each of the provinces, and in Western Cape, for instance, with Eden. In terms of the Kimberley Psychiatric Hospital, I'm going to ask the CFO also to deal with it specifically. But it's a matter that we have also discussed at our last National Health Council, the challenges that have been identified there, and it's also a problem of compliance by the contractor. So it's more of contract management, which is an area that we are generally, as NHC, discussing and raising it with individual departments. And we have strengthened our infrastructure management unit at a national level, working with DBSA, amongst others, to support provinces directly. So we share the concern around Kimberley Hospital, and as such, I did visit the DR project hospital, and we're also working with the province to ensure that it is also not delayed unduly because of the problems in the Kimberley area. DR is an NHI pilot district as well. Yes, the Pixley, Kaseme district, so DR is within that. Member Plaki, the issue of training of doctors in Cuba, I think I did deal with the issue, but the provinces identified areas where there are no doctors, but also those areas where it is difficult to attract doctors to work in. You would recall that we have a community service. So this, many of these rural areas, even though community service doctors go there, immediately when they finish their sessions, they go elsewhere. We have a problem of retention in these areas. So the issue of training doctors in Cuba is not the only solution, but it's one of the key interventions. So what we have really appreciated with provinces is that they contract these students to specific geographic areas which they will serve where there is a shortage. So that should be able to deal with your question, that these doctors are contracted to work for the number of years that the province has given them bursaries for in the areas of greatest need. But this cannot be the only intervention. Member Plaki is aware that the minister has introduced the district specialist program. So all districts should be covered, and I think we have already covered about 70%, 46% of the districts. And we have already launched this program. We have taken those district specialists that are already on board through a training program so that we advance. And we also experience similar problems in the districts that we have difficulty in attracting doctors in, as far as this program is concerned. And therefore we are negotiating with universities to create chairs so that there is rotation in this district. And that's why I'm saying the Cuban program will help us also to increase the training platform, where specialists would be happy to serve districts not as a permanent post, but as a rotating post linked also to universities. So we're looking at various interventions in this regard. the issue of negative impact in terms of provincial audits, yes, indeed, the provincial audit income would have a negative impact in two areas. Firstly, in terms of our performance on the grants, the conditional grants, and also in terms of our performance in terms of service targets. If they, for instance, they're not compliant, or they have cash flow problems, or asset management in terms of equipment is not properly managed, there will be impact on those two areas. But I'll ask the CFO to comment further if there's a need to. The issue of consequences for provinces who do not spend money appropriately. This is what the NCOP also is supposed to assist us in, oversight. And the provinces have constitutional responsibilities and powers in terms of the funds that are appropriated to them. And their legislature needs to oversee it, as well as Parliament also oversee it. We also work together with provinces through the National Health Council, which is the statutory body, to monitor and to ensure that we are all compliant. And I think with the sectoral forums of CFOs, we have managed to make some progress. But indeed, there are various oversight bodies that have to look at in this area. The issue of supervision and management of facilities, especially issues of unannounced visits, staff attitudes, and all that, it is a critical area, and that is why we felt that even though there are programs like patients, rights charter, a code of conduct for staff that they must have name tags, the complaint systems, these have been there. We felt that there's a need to have a law and a body in the Office of Standards Compliance to enforce these areas. So we do that, but over and above, the various professional councils also have a responsibility and duty to ensure the ethical conduct of those that are registered with them. So we need to what I prefer actually is that we must identify staff that has violated their code of conduct by name and discipline them by name, so that we do not affect the thousands of staff that are really doing valuable work, and that are going even beyond their call of duty to really, really assist in the public sector. So I think we need to be specific, and we would want to work with you to also follow through specific cases as such. With respect to, I think it's Member Ranto, she's not here, but just for the records, also on the issues that she has raised, supervision. We have a district health office which monitors district plans, and also one of the key indicators we monitor is supervision. We are aware of areas where supervision by the district office as well as by the province on districts is lacking, and that's one matter that we are dealing with. But at facility level, I think there's an indicator that we'll be able to pick up when we deal with the compliance with standards. For instance, every functional facility, whether it's a clinic or hospital or even at a district level, there's supposed to be what we call morbidity and mortality meetings. to check how patient management was, to look at the complaints that came up and all that. So those are the issues that we will be monitoring even much more closely. Strikes in hospitals, especially EMS, we are aware that many ambulance assistants are not permanent. And these are people in many cases who come as volunteers. And over time then, because reasonable expectations is raised as they work, they start filling the gaps of full-time employees. Then they raise these expectations and they demand permanent employment, danger allowances and all that. We are working with the province to look at this specific issue, and indeed EMS is also an area that we are working on to improve the response rate, but also to profile it as we are part of the decade of reducing road accidents in particular, but also in terms of maternal and child health, especially maternal deaths. The issue of ambulances availability for referrals is a key area of focus. On ART, we agree we need in the long run to have less people on antiretroviral treatment. On two fronts. Firstly, we need to prolong the wellness period of those that are HIV positive so that they do not deteriorate to a point where their CD4 cell counts are too low. And so it's really healthy lifestyles, nutrition and all that, stress management and support. And then the second front is when we now have a decline in the incidence, that is new infection, then we must see less and less demand for ART. But what we want to appeal to members on now is to acknowledge that we have had a huge backlog of people who require antiretroviral treatment who could not have access to it. So that is why we say it is an achievement that those that did not have access now have access. And we have I think presented it as an achievement in that context. The issue of rural areas, yes, indeed, we do have we do prioritize rural areas, even in the choice, for instance, of the NHI site, we have tried that. But if there are specific areas that we need to focus our attention to, we also are available to follow this up in a systematic way. Are we achieving MDGs, especially HIV/AIDS? We think we are. We think we are achieving our MDGs. We're working towards there. Whether by 2015 we would have been at where we expected to be, it's one thing that we believe, working together as we are, it's still a goal that we have set ourselves. In terms of the areas that we are concerned about, obviously, is maternal death. We are monitoring that closely, but we are confident that we can achieve the goals. So we must do it the South African way, is to have confidence in ourselves and to spend no effort in working towards achieving the goals we have set, especially for the health of our people. In terms of audit results, on the quality of services, subsequent to finalizing the audits, which we now have completed in this financial year, the DG established a facility improvement team and assigned senior management to the various areas, especially of the greatest need, to work with the provinces and the district management to improve these facilities. I would really propose that we set aside a specific time to make a more comprehensive program. Even in DR, when I went to make a presentation on behalf of the minister and the department, I did highlight some of the achievements since the FIT, the Facility Improvement Teams. There they are led by one of our chief directors, Dr. Fru Benson. So there are these facility improvement teams that are in this area. But at the end of the day, it's also demanding of provinces and district management to perform against the set national minimum targets. The issue of boilers, again, it's the question of are there national norms and standards? Have we put measures in place to for early warning signs? I think that's what I've discussed also with Dr. Marshall. That if we have a first policy, which we have norms and standards, which also the chair has raised, which we have developed, then the monitoring system should also have early warning signs so that intervention is earlier. We are strengthening our systems in this regard so that we do not identify problems when they have gone to the extent that they've gone in Limpopo and other areas for boilers and all that. The essential equipment list is also one such breakthrough which we approved in the financial year under discussion. NHI, yes, it is a good program. Are hospitals ready? We are making sure that hospitals are ready. If members can take interest in the progress of Brazil, for instance, and Mexico, which could not also, where they could not raise adequate resources or coordinate adequate resources to improve the public health system platform. With the introduction of the universal coverage, which is our NHI in our context, they were able to improve their public health system to a point that it is the first choice for citizens to use public health. So we should be determined as South Africans, we should be focused, and as we have made breakthroughs in challenges like you know, the political system we had into democracy, as we've had confidence in ourselves, like we did with the hosting of the World Cup, and now the progress we've made with HIV/AIDS, it is a daunting task, but it is doable, and if we get it right as South Africans, if we work together to get it right, it will certainly improve the health system overall, and the resources available for the health system will be equitably distributed for every South African, regardless of where they live. And this is what the World Health Organization is also recommending for all countries, including even countries like the United States. The reforms that are happening in terms of universal coverage, President Obama is coming up with, is also in line with the movement towards making sure that everyone is covered. Expenditure in health is not an expense. It is an investment in your human capital to sustain your economic and social development. So if we look at it in that context, and also if we look at how the countries that have increased their economic growth over the period of decades in the past, that correlates with the improvement of health that their populations have enjoyed during those periods. It correlates directly as well. So it is indeed an investment in a sustained economic and social development. Member, Honourable Member Chair, Member Boroto, in terms of Free State, I did respond to it. Organograms vis-à-vis what we experience on the ground, we are, based on the work that we've done of aligning organograms with priorities, we are in engagement with the provinces and the DBSA, Public Service Administration, to have aligned organograms. That would also look at the staff-patient ratios, staff-population ratios, to the last facility in our health system. So that work is quite advanced, but we have begun that, and Mayor Tiny Renee is assisting us together with all other senior management working with provinces on that. I think this is one area that members can call us back on in terms of details on norms and standards. On general issues of monitoring, enforcement of non-negotiables and the core standards at facility level, I think I did also address it, Member Borotho, but we indeed agree with you that the monitoring, first and foremost, is the intervention. So with the facility improvement team, it is also ensuring that we have a monitoring system continuously jointly with provinces at the national level, without really saying MECs should be left off the hook. I think members should ensure that your legislatures hold MECs accountable for ensuring compliance in the departments at the provincial level with this nationally agreed norms and standards and for services and also for resource allocation. The issue of procurement, we have raised our concerns on issues of procurement being a delay, especially if procurement is not within the Department of Health in provinces in particular. And we are discussing with the provinces, and we've agreed in principle that we must have delegations to facilities, so that the CEO should not say to yourselves or to the public that my hands are tied in fixing a globe, in making sure that medicines are available, but I have a budget. But my hands are tied because procurement is done somewhere else. So we are saying there must be delegations and accountability and performance management, and CEOs must have minimum responsibilities. You may have heard, and we can come back to you on that, that we've also established an institute for the leadership and management development for health, and working jointly with the private sector in the health sector. And the first program is for the training of CEOs, so that we can hold CEOs accountable, including district health managers, more accountable on that one. The issues of attitudes of staff, I have dealt with it, Member Borotho, as well, that we must identify specific. If we hold people accountable, and especially professionals know that there are consequences, they won't sit back if there's no medication, because that pharmacist is also registered with the pharmacy council. And if they don't raise concerns around them executing their professional duties in the best interest of the patient, they themselves need to be disciplined and also need to be referred to the relevant council. But in addition, we also encourage unions to service their members at the same time. Unions must service their members regularly, not only when there is negotiations for higher salaries, but if the working conditions do not align with the norms, standards, and all that, so that we work collectively to support those of our staff that are at the front line of service. But it is not acceptable that a manager just folds arms and sits back and leaves our patients to themselves. They are paid on a monthly basis. They must write reports on a monthly basis. And they must also know how to escalate the problem if in the best interest of patients. And that's what health professionals are all about, to always act in the best interest of patients. I think those are some of the issues that were raised, and maybe I think there are two areas that I asked that the CFO deals with, but are technical, and Dr. Pillay can also, if there's one or two issues that I have dealt with, but we are available to come back and to deal with the details of the other areas. Thank you.
Before you come in, can I just say we have 5 minutes left?
Chair, thanks. The first one was about the Eastern Cape and exceeding the budget. The issue is that they might have shown more budget or more spend than budget, but the difference between the conditional grant allocation and what was spent is defaults back to equitable share. So if they've had 10 rand and they spend the 12, that 2 rand will then be shown against equitable share, and that's where they have to carry it. But they would show the expenditure as part of the conditional grant in total. So there's no additional funding that we've transferred to them to make up any overspend. The overspend that's shown there was financed by the equitable share. The issue of the Kimberley Psychiatric, the assertion is totally correct. Is that the province has to ask for an amendment to the HIG or HRG, the revive or the infrastructure grant. It has to be gazetted properly, and we've actually engaged the province on a number of times to ask them to give us the information and give us a request to do it. The business plan belongs to them. They need to request for an amendment on business plan. So that thing has been ongoing. My current information is still that we're still waiting for them to actually enact the entire process. I also know that we've been engaged with the province quite a number of times through our PMSU and through our infrastructure unit. I believe there is a forensic investigation that's ongoing. So I think from our side there is some action on that project. Thank you, Liam.
Okay. Dr. Pillay?
Chair, thank you very much. Firstly, let me just say, if we had more time, my colleagues would have responded in significantly more detail. So Dr. Carol Marshall on quality of care, Ms. Tanya Reddy on all the personnel issues, including cleaning up of personnel. She's been leading that process. Ms. Nobayeni Ladla is the new COO, and she's responsible for coordinating provincial issues, supporting provinces, monitoring provinces, and of course, Ms. Melanie Bolmerant has been responsible for the FITS teams and the NHI pilots, and also setting up a desktop for each HOD so that they can see what's happening at facility
and
level
MECs.
And MECs. So what we have now, which is a new thing which she's been leading, is where we take all of the information and put it on the computers of the HODs and the MECs so they can see what's happening all the way down to a facility from their offices, and then go and visit those that show some problems. And we have the same facility up in the national department, so all managers in the national department can also look at what's going on at facility level, including the deputy minister and the minister. And of course, the CFO and myself. Just to say two things. On medical male circumcision, there's no problem with doctors doing medical male circumcision. You know, it's a standard procedure. The key challenge is not having enough doctors and doctor time to do as many as we need. So we are working with the World Health Organization to get a new device called PrePex, which is likely to be accredited by the WHO next year, and then we will be able to do far more of them. And the last point, Honorable Chair, that I'd like to make a note of is antiretrovirals. You know, the thing about antiretrovirals, it's not just for treatment. There's now very good evidence that it also prevents new infections. So the more people you put on treatment, it has an impact on incidence, the new cases. And we've showed that in a rural area in KwaZulu-Natal. So it's actually treatment as prevention. So there's a new concept of treatment as prevention. So it's a good thing to put more and more people on antiretrovirals because it also prevents new infections. Though, of course, for prevention, you need to do all these other things as well. I'll stop there in the interest of time. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. If you
ask. Thank you. Thank you very much. We enter in this month, the 1st of December. It's National AIDS Day, World AIDS Day, I mean. From what you have been doing, we are very proud as South Africans that this department has really looked into this issue of HIV and AIDS, and we are having very positive results over that. The only thing is we wish people could take it as any other condition, you know. They must take it as that, because wherever we are, when we do our constituency visit, you'll always have this problem of saying, we are being discriminated, we are put in a, you know, people don't want to go there because immediately in some way he's being seen that, no, that one is. So people must understand the condition, and I think with what you are bringing and all the researches that are being done,
we will have people understanding at the end that this is a condition like diabetes, like all the others, and that will assist us, because the deputy minister was talking about now going mentally. I think the mental part comes because of our attitude towards those people. Anyway, honorable members, this is the end of us and Department of Health for this year. And thank you very much. The Department of Health, I must say that you didn't disappoint us. We never complained, and we are happy with your enthusiasm. We know that you are the minister in this department is said to be hyperactive, but we like that because it's hyperactive positively towards assisting the people of this country and bringing down the mortal. Thank you very much. The meeting is closed. Honorable members, we'll meet tomorrow. Sure.